Welcome to Psych Pearls podcast by Psychiatric Times. With thoughtful insights into the world of psychiatry, this podcast provides timely clinical commentary and practical cutting-edge pearls for you and your practice. We hope you enjoy it. My name is Paul Gleason, and my guest today is Dr. Charles Figley. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Well, why don't we begin by giving you a chance to tell us a little bit about yourself and your work with the Tulane University Traumatology Institute.
Okay, I'm at Tulane University, which is in New Orleans. I'm the Paul Henry Kurzweig Chair in Disaster Mental Health and Distinguished Professor. It's a long title, but you get the idea. I'm in the School of Social Work and certainly work with and focus on my Traumatology Institute, but I also work with the Disaster Resilience Leadership Academy and the PhD program in City Culture and Community and several other consortia that are at Tulane and elsewhere. That's the major thing that I'm doing right now.
Yeah, that's a lot on one plate. I noticed that the Institute has a military mental health research initiative, and we're coming up to Veterans Day now. Could you tell us more about that initiative?
Well, it was started some time ago. Actually, it was started at Purdue University, and then I moved to Florida State for a number of years, a dozen years or so, and then I'm here in New Orleans. And it's focused on the research that I've started and continued along the way. It's essentially collaborating with a number of colleagues of mine that focus on the real clinical challenges in working with combat veterans in particular, but generally all traumatized people. And what we attempt to do is to educate the public about what they should know and need to know, but at the same time serve as an outlet or as a context for discussing issues that we're talking about today, which is how can we best help combat veterans in particular, but just veterans generally in this day and age.
Right. And what have you found? You know, what are the major challenges for treating combat veterans or veterans generally?
Yeah, that's a good idea. I mean, it's a good question, and it's also a very, very broad question.
I know.
What we focus on primarily are trauma. What is it like being in combat? What are the things that you experience for second and third, you know, depending on your particular rank or your specialization? Mm-hmm. But the real signature disorder or problem that psychiatrists, psychologists, and others face is post-traumatic stress disorder. It is the signature traumatic diagnosis for combat veterans these days. There are certainly other elements of it, but PTSD is a challenge. And one of the things that we've tried to take on is to educate the public and others about the experiences of veterans, but particularly combat veterans, and right. how they're dealing with their emotions once they leave the military, mm-hmm. and but also, you know, how they're doing during the military. So it's in very much a outside of the military, but we work closely with colleagues who are inside of the military to try to understand and try to help combat veterans deal with the compassion fatigue and post-traumatic stress disorder.
Right, and let's dig down into the treatment of post-traumatic stress disorder. How can psychiatrists recognize and care for PTSD in their patients who are veterans, you know, especially if they don't immediately present with PTSD?
Yeah, that's a good question. Essentially, war veterans are tricky to work with.
Yes.
Tricky to the extent that they've had very specific experiences, and they've dealt with some unusual circumstances, at least unusual to civilians. So it's really critical that the practitioner, whoever they are, wherever they come from, whatever the training they've gotten, if they're interested in helping, they need to get to know the veteran. They need to gain their trust. They need to walk the walk, in effect. because they have, these combat veterans have seen it all. And they're somewhat tolerant to explain what they've seen and what they've experienced to practitioners, but they want to get down to work as quickly as possible. And many of them have been in therapy for a number of years. So I think with psychiatry, one of the real important elements is to try to figure out what's going on, but mostly to enable them to live their lives now rather than in the past. And as far as I, my senses are, for those who are in this particular area, they are, I think, fairly pleased with the progress that has been made in the last 10 years in the area of treating people who have trauma-related issues like combat veterans.
Yeah, so it sounds like in the last 10 years there has been some real progress in treatment. Could you speak a little bit to that? What sort of new things are psychiatrists and others doing?
Well, I'm going to skip the drugs because I'm not a specialist in that particular area, but there are a number of very powerful treatment approaches. One I want to mention that's been around for a while, but there's not a lot known about it, at least in the general public, and that is eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. It is an effort to enable combat veterans, as we're speaking now, to be able to work through and process the trauma that has been piling up, if you will, over the years, and enable them to link and connect causes of their challenges and difficulties with particular strategies moving forward. And for some of them, actually for many of them, being able to manage their anxiety and their stress is a real challenge. One of the things that I mentioned in addition to post-traumatic stress disorder is compassion fatigue. And it essentially, yes, it is the fatigue of being compassionate. And as a matter of fact, practitioners are the ones that really, really suffer from this the most. But there are a lot of practitioners who also serve in the military, especially as officers. So that challenge of dealing with the weight of the anxiety and stress that not only you experience, but the people that work, that report to you, that work with you, and especially military officers, field command officers, are a very, very challenging and difficult position because they need to maintain and help maintain the morale, hopefully high morale, of their men and women, but at the same time, they have to take care of their own particular needs. And sometimes they put those needs behind the others, unfortunately.
Yeah. How might sort of psychiatric or medical comorbidities complicate the treatment process? Are there any ones
very
in particular that are common? Very much so, you said.
Yes, very much so. And actually, PTSD is an example of that, in which it can be disguised as simple nightmares or simply inability to get to sleep or stay asleep. So there's a lot of effort focused on sleeping. But the underlying challenge for many of them is the experiences they've had and the fears that they have. So there is, for many of these men and women, there's a presentation that is anxiety, is fear, and the effort to maintain that, an effort to control that and to move forward is really a challenge for them.
I bet. You know, historically, I was wondering, you know, obviously there are a lot of veterans from a lot of different wars and conflicts. Do different wars and conflicts tend to kind of affect veterans' mental health differently? If so, why? And if not, why not?
Well, for the most part, I think it's pretty similar. I think that in all wars, there is the grind. There is the fog of war. There is the tolerance for change and especially tolerance for anxiety and fear. You have to live with fear on a regular basis as a combat veteran. But also, if you are a woman in a destructive relationship and for example, a husband who beats you, that clearly is also like war, to the extent that you monitor what another person is doing and are ready to stand by and to defend yourself or your children. So these kinds of constantly happening and exploding and having to manage is a regular problem with combat veterans, but it's also true for others who suffer from post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah, that's interesting. So the things that veterans may be experiencing as PTSD, we might see similar mental health problems in lots of other groups as well.
Yes,
if they're going through the same kind of problems. Yeah, of course.
Yes, exactly. And they, because a lot of people, even today, assume that if you have PTSD or any kind of traumatic experience, you must be in war. But they don't know very much about how that's manifested and the challenges that the combat veterans face in that regard. But it's something that is overlooked quite a bit in terms of the similarities and differences of those who suffer from PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
You know, one thing that I hadn't really talked about was the gender differences.
I was going to ask you about that next.
Yeah, females more and more are being exposed to combat, and this has been one of the penultimate changes that have happened in the military within the last 5-6 years, maybe even less than that. So there is, I've studied combat veterans for more than 40 years, and I've looked at combat medics, and combat medics include women. And so consequently, we were able to, when we were in Germany, we were able to gather data on all combat medics, but in particular, I was interested in looking at women. And it is consistent with what we have found all along, and that is that women function as well or better than men, and that they have no more mental health problems or challenges than men. Part of this is the notion of wanting to be a combat fighting machine, and sometimes that requires a certain type of person. But we didn't find really any substantial differences in terms of the quantity and quality of symptoms of mental health, in particular combat-related symptoms between men and women.
And do you have a sense of why that might be? You've gone into that a little, but I wanted to give you an opportunity to say even more.
You know, it was really surprising to us, because when we have studied men and women outside of the military, women more often than not, and it's certainly found in the literature as well, to have substantially more anxiety than men, and more, as a result, than psychiatric injuries. But we are... our sense is that these women know that they're going into what has been, at least up to that time, a male-dominated specialization. And they recognized pretty early on what it's going to take. And I certainly experienced this when I was in the Marine Corps, that combat medics and corpsmen received tremendous amounts of respect from their fellow Marines or soldiers or airmen. Because they're in it too, that they have the same risks, that they take sometimes greater risks than others. So there is a different kind of climate within the military than there is in other kinds of contexts outside of being a combat medic. But it's great to see this because these women are very, very proud and of their achievements and of being a combat medic. We completed a book recently called Combat Social Work, and that is another group of people, all officers, who risk their life. They are combatants because of the work they do. A good friend of mine died in 2011 in Afghanistan. He was being driven to an outpost. So it definitely happens. But for these combat social workers as well as combat medics, it's a challenge that they are quite proud of. And in contrast to other war veterans, they're more likely than not to talk about their experiences because in many ways it was quite life-threatening, and they should be proud of their service.
Does that make them a little harder to treat as a psychiatrist if they're sort of reticent about what they've been through?
If you're reticent, yes, but if you're interested in talking about it, like combat social workers, but also combat medics, it makes it easier. Did I understand you correctly? Maybe I didn't.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned that you served in the Marine Corps. Did that sort of inspire your interest in the subject?
Yes, definitely. Yeah, I mean, I went in relatively early, 65, 66, a year of tour, and we landed in Hue, H-U-E, and then served down in Chu Lai and then back up to Da Nang. So I saw quite a bit of the country, and it was a useful, helpful experience with regard to educating me about the way the world works, in particular the military. But it was eye-opening with regard to the realities of war. And I found myself becoming more and more supportive, actually, of people who were against wars. And this was back during the end of the war, at least. So I learned quite a bit. But the interesting thing is that in addition to being anti-war, I've been very pro-veteran, not so much because they represent war, but because they've sacrificed more than other people for their country. And for the most part, not all veterans are Republicans or have any particular attitude or perspective in life. Some would suggest that they tend to be more conservative, but they tend to be, you know, from populations that are they have to work for a living, let's put it that way. Certainly most of them in the Vietnam War were drafted, but by and large, they've come through it okay. I mean, if you ask me how are Vietnam veterans doing today, I would say that they're doing extraordinarily well. And I have been fighting for a very, very long time to set the record straight of clarifying that just because you go into the military or even into war doesn't mean that your life is over, that these men and women have not only tremendous courage, but they've seen a lot about life and that they can educate the rest of us about what they conclude from those experiences.
Well, why do you think that they've ended up doing so well? I mean, the kind of cultural idea we have is that it's such a traumatic experience. So many of them come out of it so badly hurt or with PTSD. How has it turned out better than that?
Because the attitudes about Vietnam veterans were formed a very long time ago, and it was associated with a bad war. And I've been saying this for a very long time and have data lined up to prove it, that they've come through it in all measures extraordinarily well, despite the lack of support. So what I would suggest is that their experiences were uniquely different than others, except maybe during World War II and the Korean War, because they were drafted, or at least that was held over their head in terms of their motivation to join. I think in part then, because of a broader spectrum of the American population, that they kind of represent more of this country in terms of Vietnam veterans because of the draft. And I would hope that those who are listening to this program would make an effort to talk to a veteran, and especially those that they know, and to say they listen to this program and ask them questions. I mean, they don't have to answer your questions, but to show the respect and appreciation, that would be helpful, let's say.
Yes, and that's kind of what we can sort of all do socially. What has the U.S. military done to help veterans with mental health, and has it been making a difference?
Well, I have a book coming out next year called Psychiatric Casualties, and I think the subtitle will tell it all. It's Psychiatric Casualties: How the Military Ignores the Full Cost of War. And I know it's going to annoy a number of people, but I didn't write it to annoy people. I wrote it to wake them up, because there are lots and lots of psychiatric casualties that are unnecessary, and the military knows this and is not sure what to do about it. And what we try to do in the book, published by Columbia University, is to sort of lay it out, of identifying a number of fallacies that the general public have about the military and about veterans, and the notion that it's far harder, far more difficult in fighting a war than a lot of people think about. I think we sugarcoat it and we make it look nice and even inviting. But it is not just hell, it is hell that frames people's lives, and that it's extraordinarily difficult for some people to work themselves out of that. And my hope is that this program will sufficiently interest my fellow Americans in asking for themselves how our veteran population is doing, because my guess is that they're doing far better than what people think, and that's part of the problem. The sense of veterans that people don't get them, people don't understand, and why bother to understand? And that's perhaps why they have a chip on their shoulder, and why they are pretty angry about the way they've been treated.
Well, we certainly look forward to that book. It may annoy some people, but we look forward to learning about it.
Okay.
Dr. Figley, that's about all the time we've got today, but thank you so much for coming on Psych Pearls. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much. Bye.